agnostics, long-haired weirdos, short-haired weirdos, vandals, hooligans.
Love the government, hug the government, love the government, hug the government, love the government.
Welcome to the Politics Guys, a place for bipartisan, rational, and civil debate on American politics and policy. I'm Michael Baranowski, professor of political science at Northern Kentucky University. I'm joined today by my conservative counterpart, Cleveland area attorney and defender of freedom, Jay Carson.
Hey, good afternoon, Mike.
Hey, Jay. So, as usual, there were a bunch of things that we did not get to on the regular show that I definitely wanted to talk with you about. And the first one, which we had to move along in the interest of time, was another one of those Supreme Court oral arguments in the first week of the court's new term that I dealt with my beloved Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
And, yes.
Whenever I see those words, my heart just soars. But anyway, so here's the deal. If you don't know, CFPB was created in 2010. It was part of the Dodd-Frank financial reform legislation that was passed after the financial crisis a few years before that. And what you need
specifically
to
do, by Senator Elizabeth Warren.
It was initially
her
idea.
Baby.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And in an attempt to ensure the independence of the agency, instead of funding it through the annual appropriations process, what the Congress did was they set it up based on, they said, okay, here's the amount of funding. We're going to cap this amount. We'll adjust it for inflation, but we're not going to pay for it out of the annual budgetary appropriation. You're going to get this money from the Federal Reserve, which also, by the way, doesn't get its money through an annual appropriation. It gets its money basically through interest earned on government securities, more or less. And so it's a weird, unusual funding mechanism. And through it, last year, in the last fiscal year, 2022, CFPB received a little over $640 million in funding. Now, the issue here, and the reason why this is before the Supreme Court, is the Constitution's Appropriations Clause. This is Article 1, Section 9. And that reads, the relevant section reads, no money shall be drawn from the Treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law. The argument here against the funding structure then is that this, the way I described it, that not only that it's not funded by congressional appropriations directly, but that it's funded by another agency that's not funded by congressional appropriations, that kind of double remove violates the appropriations clause, and that it's immaterial that Congress authorized this in the first place, or that they placed a cap on the funding amount. That doesn't in the end matter. Now, the government's response to this is that, well, there's a long history of agencies being funded directly. I already mentioned the Federal Reserve. The Customs Service at the beginning was funded indirectly, but Congress still retains control over agency funding, can alter the structure, can alter the funding mechanism through legislation whenever it wants. Justice Kavanaugh, in fact, in oral arguments pointed out, Congress could change how CFPB is funded, as he said, tomorrow, and there's nothing permanent or perpetual about this. And also in oral arguments, Justice Jackson raised a concern about judicial overreach in kind of this policing of the funding choices of Congress by the court, saying basically, or asking, where's the principle here for the court to employ in deciding whether a funding mechanism Congress authorized violates this clause? Which kind of suggested to me that the rule she would want would be maybe as basic as, if Congress sets up an appropriations process, that's an appropriation made by law. So that's where we are. I think that's all the background really we necessarily need. You might want to add some things, but what do you think about all this?
Well, one man's independence is another man's lack of oversight. I guess is how I would, right?
Okay.
And that would seem to be the problem. If the idea is the appropriation of the clause brings with it, some lack of accountability, maybe is the better word I should have used. That there ought to be, political accountability for any government institutions. Now, as you point out, and as Justice Brown pointed out, the political accountability would always be that, you know, if Congress wanted to tomorrow, for this exercise, assume a speaker, wanted to, you know, abolish the CFPB, it could do so.
Or change its funding to a dollar a year.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's, you know, I think that's a non-frivolous argument there, that look, there is ultimately, some accountability. That said, the biggest way in which Congress exercises its oversight tends to be, through the budgeting process. So a agency that is free of that constraint, is in many ways free of, you could call it, political interference, or you could call it, good old fashioned congressional oversight. But I think that sums up the argument, right?
Yeah. Except that I think that does sum it up really well. I would add one thing is that the word probably wouldn't be free of oversight, but the word would be more insulated from it because, you know, because again, Congress could pass a law.
Well, again, yes, you point out, yeah, that theoretically Congress could get rid of it tomorrow.
And so I guess here's my question.
I say that theoretically. Because I would wonder what would happen, right? If Congress,
but they could also change.
I could see an argument coming the other way saying, look, Congress, who are you to tell us, we can't keep doing this. It's not your money. You haven't appropriated anything.
But at least in the case of the CFPB, I think the argument would be, well, in fact, we did appropriate a number. We assigned a specific number to be given to this agency, and we said, it'll be this number. It'll be adjusted for inflation every year. And so that is, in effect, a congressional appropriation. It's not like we said, well, spend whatever you want, figure it out with the Federal Reserve. We don't know. And through the course of regular congressional action, they could, in whenever they wanted to, say, well, we're changing that baseline appropriation. We're changing the mechanism. That's a very different argument than saying, I think we're changing how the Fed, which basically has all the money it wants, you know, more or less. So you see what I'm saying, which is why I feel like this is sort of a reach. I think if there hadn't been that initial appropriation, and if it hadn't been capped, then I think there's a stronger argument there. But that's not the case before it. So in a weird way, I think that there would be a better case for abolishing the Federal Reserve, or at least declaring the funding mechanism of the Federal Reserve unconstitutional, than declaring the funding mechanism for the CFPB unconstitutional.
I'm not sure I follow you there.
Meaning that Congress has put no legislative limit.
Right. I get that.
Where there is a limit on the CFPB.
But I think it's also a little different in that the Federal Reserve tends to, I'm going to fail miserably, I think, because now it's sort of, I think it's after 5 o'clock Friday. It's five o'clock somewhere, and that somewhere is here. And, my mental reserves are all but exhausted. But I would say there's a difference in the scope of what the Federal Reserve does. Its specific mandate, as opposed to the Federal Reserve, isn't. And again, I want to be careful here. I see what you're saying.
Okay.
They do have regulations, but they're not a regulator per se, right?
They certainly
do have rules and stuff that they place on banks and right, but it's all sort of attendant to these independent financial transactions between them.
Well, yes and no. I would argue that the Federal Reserve has an enormously larger impact on the U.S. and the world economy than the CFPB. And so therefore, if you have what some people believe to be the most important government agency of any government in the world with essentially a blank check, that's more concerning than the fact that the CFPB is limited to.
Well, there are plenty of I'd say hardcore conservatives who would take up that argument. Say, well, yeah, throw get rid of the damn Federal Reserve and let's go back to the gold standard and all that. But I guess my argument is it's different in that banks, and again, as this is, I'll put these in quotes, but, you know, are entering into various voluntary transactions with the Federal Reserve. Now you say voluntary and you can say, well, look, it's necessary.
Yeah, they're not very voluntary.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
As opposed to an agency that is sort of, you know, you can't simply say, I'm not going to abide by a CFPB rule.
Well, I think,
the scope of the CFPB, let me put it this way, has more, wades more into private affairs than what the FDI or the Fed does, in that the Fed, it's sort of, again, I put this in quotes, but kind of a voluntary type.
Yeah. You put it in quotes without a doubt. Well, it would be unfair for me to press you on this point because we weren't neither of us prepared for an argument about the merits of or the constitutionality.
Bringing back the gold standard,
that's a whole other case. Yeah, maybe we should bring on Trey for that one. I think he might be a little more in favor of that sort of thing. I don't know, being the closest probably of all of us to the kind of Paulian, if you will, Rand and or Ron, probably more Ron view of these things. But that's another story. Let me ask you one more thing. So, what about Justice Jackson's concern that there should be some sort of principle here, and that it's better to essentially let Congress decide what an appropriations process, to err on the side of Congress, basically, in this case, when there does not seem to be any kind of a clear standard or rule other than that the court would just basically make up out of whole cloth?
Well, other than if you say this does violate the appropriations clause, right? Because obviously if you come out to say that if you take that route, then it all goes away. But her thinking on let them play ball, right? I mean, I think that's my sense that this is something that's delegated to Congress. Congress can make terrible decisions up to a point, so long as they're not terrible unconstitutional decisions. And I guess that's sort of what the question that needs to be hemmed out. And I do think there is there's a judicial restraint argument to be made here. That you might say, this is terrible policy, but it's not the court's job to wade in and fix it.
All right. Well, we will see much later on this year. Yeah, there you go.
Didn't see that coming.
No, I did not. Well, no, actually from you, that doesn't surprise me that much for sure. But we will see how that works out much later on this year. It's going to be quite a while before they reach a decision on that. But anyway, let's move on to something very
target.
Very different. I don't know. That was weird. Anyway, strange voices in the background. But so, for something very different, not every evening, but a lot of evenings, I sit back on the couch after dinner for a little while, relax, and I watch reruns of a TV show called Spencer for Hire. I don't know if you remember. It was
a cheesy
80s TV show, just to kind of turn my brain off and relax, that sort of thing. I watch it on the Roku channel because that's where it is. And the Roku channel is free with ads, right? And most of the ads are for things like, I don't know, you know, medicines and diapers and, you know, things that I'm not really, you know,
things for a demographic that we're not really a part of yet.
Not quite, at least. Yes.
Although, I'm sort of an old soul, and I.
But anyway, so one of these ads that I've been seeing more and more is for an ad sort of inveighing against the so-called Credit Card Competition Act, and there's these ominous tones. They claim it's being pushed by evil corporations that want to take away rewards points that, if you listen to the ad, basically make America possible. You know, we couldn't run without rewards points. And so I was curious, because generally speaking, on policy issues, if something is seen as important enough for somebody to spend money running TV ads on, that means it's probably a non-trivial sort of thing, right? And so I thought I'd dig into it. So here's the deal. the credit card competition act, we'll call it the triple C. No, we won't call it the triple CA, the credit card competition act. It's bipartisan Senate legislation. It was introduced by Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois. Another Democrat co-sponsored it, as well as two Republicans, Roger Marshall of Kansas and Ohio's own J.D. Vance are the four sponsors. And the stated goal of this is to give merchants a choice of who processes their credit card transactions beyond Visa and MasterCard. Together, they control somewhere around 83% of all payment network activity. And because if you don't go with Visa or MasterCard for your transactions, that basically means you don't get to accept Visa or MasterCard. You're basically out of business in our modern, right, consumer economy. And so what the proponents of this bill look to is to say, take a look at what are the so-called swipe fees. And that's what merchants are charged every time you use a card, you or I use a card. That's somewhere between 2-4% of every sale. If we compare that to swipe fees in Europe, 0.3%. They're capped by law at that point. And so the thinking here is, well, we don't want to put hard caps in place like they have in the EU, but we're getting hosed on these fees because Visa and MasterCard have a duopoly. And so what the act would do was it would allow merchants to choose at least one non-Visa or MasterCard processor. And by doing that, by telling Visa and MasterCard, hey, you have to let them choose another option and not say it's either us or you don't get to use our cards, then there'd be real competition. That would lower prices, lower swipe fees, and that would be passed on to consumers. And according to some research, swipe fees are the second highest cost of retail businesses behind just employee wages and actually ahead of healthcare and benefits. So, and the takeaway, they'll take away your rewards argument. They counter that by pointing to Europe, where even with those much lower processing fees, they still have rewards programs and that sort of thing. They also say, take a look at the gross profit margins of Visa and MasterCard, somewhere around 45-50%. So, Jay, I don't know if you've seen the ads, but...
Oh, I have seen the ads, oh, yes.
Okay, so what's your take? Am I missing anything here in this analysis? What do you think?
No, I think you're spot on there. And I think you would probably know where I go on this. Now, I would certainly oppose anything that would prohibit credit card companies from giving rewards or whatever incentives they want to their customers to bring customers in. I'm all for competition, and I think more competition is better for everybody. That's what made America great, Mike. Not just airline miles.
I know you're for competition, but what do you think about forcing competition in this sense?
Yeah, I suppose the other way to look at it would be: is there an antitrust problem here? Now, apparently, no one's. The FTC hasn't seen it that way, nor has any consumer brought a case that's bubbled up enough to make it there. So that said, I guess the question is there legitimate competition out there? Can you can't create something that, we need you to bring on some other provider that doesn't exist. Now, I think once the government does that, that other provider will appear pretty quickly. But I think Adam Smith, would be in favor of this type of, better statutes to guarantee competition, than to preserve, monopolies or duopolies.
Yeah. Cause I think part of the problem is the fact that there are alternate processors, but if by going with one of them, you have to not use Visa,
right? It would be if, they, as I understand it, the issue would be you would have some sort of contract exclusivity with one of these other providers that then says you can't accept anybody, other competitors. And I think that's anti-competitive and bad policy.
You know, we just had a supporter point out something that I hadn't thought about, but it's an interesting point, saying that the EU guarantees users against fraud. by the government, not by the credit card company. And so, in other words, some of the costs then are borne by the government, not the company. And so we can't necessarily just do an apples. It's not necessarily an apples to apples swipe fee comparison, because if Visa and MasterCard in the EU are not bearing the full costs of potential fraud, then they can afford to have lower fees. And that I hadn't thought about that. That's an interesting and I think, you know, reasonable point to raise.
I think that is a good point.
I would also wonder, that's the danger with some of these direct comparisons, because they are international businesses. You can say, well, maybe 3% or 4% swipe fees are subsidizing 0.3% swipe fees in Europe. And so how does that, it becomes very muddled, certainly.
We hope you enjoyed this preview of our supporters exclusive midweek show. If you'd like to hear the rest of the episode, we hope you'll consider becoming a supporter. Supporters get ad-free access to all of our shows, membership in our Politics Guys Discord group, where you can join in on the conversation, and other benefits at different levels of support. To become a supporter, go to patreon.com/politicsguys. You can also support us through Venmo, we're @politicsguys, or through PayPal. You'll find all of our support links in the show notes, as well as at politicsguys.com/support. And if you'd like to get the midweek show, but you're not in a position to become a financial supporter, that's not a problem. Just send me an email at mike@politicsguys.com, and I'll be happy to get that set up for you.